Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
And I'm Adam Scott.
The Severance Podcast is back on Thursday, June 26th.
Each week, we talk about the movies and TV shows that influence Severance with the artists who make them.
Follow and listen everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and his guest by phone at 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC. Email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com or get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here's Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And we are here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. We probably have a couple lines open for you, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC, and we will do our best to help you out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. And yeah, bandwidth is a big concern these days. The restrictions on hitting you for overage costs on your bandwidth have seemed to be relaxed, which doesn't make sense because everyone's saying we're still in the midst of stuff, so it doesn't make any sense to me. But they're billing you for your usage now, and you got to make sure you don't leave the TV on and streaming, because leaving the TV on in the old days was just a rabbit ears and some aluminum foil, right? And didn't cost you anything but electricity, which of course is important. Now, if you leave the TV on along with the electricity you're using, you're consuming bandwidth, and your bandwidth provider, your internet provider, is going to be happy to charge you for it. Again, it's just like water or anything else that you use. So keep that in mind. Let's go.
Just makes the rabbit ears more attractive.
It does. Let's go to your calls. We're going to go to Ray in Burlington next, if you're there, Ray. Ray, you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Sure, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, thanks for taking my call first.
Our pleasure.
And, this is my question. I would like to transfer movies from a Hi8 camcorder taken a number of years ago and create DVDs. So can I mention the software that I purchased or not?
Sure, yeah. The more information, the better.
Great. So I purchased the Dazzle DVD Recorder HD.
All right.
Installed the software and the hardware. And when I went through and started doing some test recordings, the audio was fine on all of the recordings, but the video was very choppy. So did a Google search and tried a few things, such as shutting down the computer, cutting back the apps from a memory standpoint. Nothing worked. So I did email Corel, and after a couple back-and-forth emails, they suggested a couple things. They said, download your DirectX exec file, which I did successfully. And then they said, update your driver. Mm-hmm. So they took me to a website that was the Intel graphics driver for Windows. And when I tried to download it and install it, it said the driver being installed is not valid for the computer. Contact your computer manufacturer. So, interestingly enough, when I go into device driver, I can see that my graphics driver is actually an Intel one from back in March of 2017. Mm-hmm. And when I compare and went to the Lenovo support website, the driver that they have for this machine, because I put in the serial number, and so they bring up the Intel driver, it's actually from 2015. So the question for you is this potentially a driver issue? And tell me a little bit about, you know, the dangers or potential improvements I might get by, if I want to reload that older Lenovo driver that they suggest at their support website.
Yeah, so I don't think that's any of your problems. So your problem is in rendering. And taking the processing of that video and rendering it for you to be burned into a DVD image. Rendering is a very heavy CPU and graphics card intensive operation. So what's your CPU?
Oh, gosh. Okay, got to be honest. I'm on the computer right now.
Do you know if it's an i5, an i3, an i7?
You know what? It's a Lenovo Pro 2. I think it's the i5. I'm here at the computer, so I could check it quick if I'm... And I'm in Device Manager.
You should be able to look at the CPU. It might tell you what the level of device you have there.
Okay.
But an i5 is more of a business-grade, office type of CPU. It's fine, but it's not that beefy for rendering graphics.
Okay.
The other aspect of this is your hard drive. If it's a slow 7200 RPM spinny style drive and not a solid state drive,
I believe it's a solid state, because I have seen that when I've with the Lenovo, even though it's 5 years ago, I'm pretty sure it's a solid state.
Okay. Well, yeah, you splurged when you bought it 5 years ago. It was expensive back then. So you make sure you do the work on a solid state drive. Make sure you have no antivirus running. Make sure you have no screensavers running, no other programs running. You need the CPU and graphics card to have every bit of resources it can have to render your video. The software you're using is going to bring that video in and try to assemble it with the sound at the same time.
Okay.
So keep that in mind. You need enough hardware to do it. Now, if it's just a built-in Intel video card on a Lenovo device, it may not be powerful enough either. It may not have enough juice. When I say juice, more like RAM on the card or processing power to do a very good job to assist you.
Okay.
So I think
it sounds like what you're saying is this: I need to have a lot more CPU, which is memory, in order for that signal as it's coming across to be able to be processed fast enough so that the video that I see in the software isn't choppy and is smooth.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. CPU is not memory. CPU is actual ability.
Ability. Oh,
think
okay.
of the CPU as the brains of the machine. It's IQ, its ability to process that data for you.
Okay.
And RAM is important too. So again, you need enough headroom in the system so that it can actually get that video rendered and processed. I do videos for my family every year, and before I changed to a solid-state i7-based system, it would take 8 hours to render a 45-minute DVD. Now it's down to, you know, less than an hour, and I do it on Blu-ray level, and it's all 4K video. So you can really do a lot if you have the right equipment.
Okay. Yeah, because when I use the Dazzle software, I can see what's coming across.
Yeah.
Stored on the hard drive, and so I'm getting the choppiness. So it looks like it's just, I'm gonna, for lack of a better term, it's a one-to-one view on the screen and the software versus what I see on the screen on the compute on the camcorder. So
right, the camcorder looks perfect, but the screen input, when you're accepting that data and it tries to render it together, you're seeing that poor result, right?
Yeah, I'm seeing that. Yeah, the choppiness. And then when I play it back, of course, I see what I saw on the input side.
Yeah.
So that's what's that. So I guess what you're saying is, if I've got an i5, which I think I do, that might be enough if I have enough memory,
enough solid state drive, enough RAM, and a powerful enough video card to do the work.
Okay. Since I have the video cards in there, it is the Intel, I think if I'm using the right term, it's HD Graphics 5300. It's already installed on it.
Right.
Should I be going out to try and see if there's another graphics card that I would use? When I try to do the update in the device manager process, it says you've got the most recent one updated and you don't need...
Right. I don't think that driver will do any benefit for you. You should go look at the software itself. And you said it was a Corel product?
It's Corel, yep.
Go look and see what its requirements are, its specs are.
Okay.
And try to get a video card or see what a video card would cost to match the specs that are required to do this process.
I see. Okay.
That's the biggest problem people have is they buy the software and don't realize whether or not their hardware can do what they're asking it to do. And we have this issue all the time. A computer is not a computer. We've got clients, hey, I can buy a $300 computer. Well, yeah, but it won't do a whole lot.
Right. Okay. So I'll check the specs on the Dazzle. Besides that, do you have any other suggestions of other either software or products that are also in the market that do a good job of this? And
no, I don't. I've never really done anything with Super 8, so you need a good way to video capture that and render that data and get it into your system, and it's going to be your video card. So if you've already picked a tool, I would just tell you to try to make sure that your hardware can support that tool properly. Otherwise, you're going to have poor results.
Okay. One last question.
Yeah.
If I do install other... What's the, I guess you could say, the potential issues or danger I could get into if I start trying to install other graphics drivers? Could they cause other issues with other apps and other parts of the computer?
Not generally. I mean, if you're installing the right driver for the right hardware, you're okay. But to put an old driver on there makes no sense to me. You don't want to go to a 2015 driver when you've got a 2017 one running already.
Great.
So I don't think their support really should have talked about... The first thing they should have asked you is, you know, hey, Ray, does your hardware meet our specifications?
Yeah.
And they didn't do that, did they?
No, but what they did do is they asked me for, they asked me to pick up and they a couple, oh, they wanted to do a Win audit and then a MS Info 32 report. And mm-hmm. they looked through all my components, supposedly, and said, oh, this is what you may be having the issues with. So,
okay.
But they didn't ask me that question about the hardware. They didn't ask me about the CPU. So.
Yeah. Well, that's where they really should start, to make sure you match and meet their specs. That's number one. And you'll get better performance with better hardware.
Good. Well, you know what I might do? Now that I've gone back to them, I may email them back and say, what about my CPU and my memory and hardware specs? And
yeah.
are those matching so that the... they can provide me with the same type of advice that, or, you know, see what they say with the advice that I give to them that I got
right.
from you.
Sounds good.
So, hey, thanks very much. Have a good Halloween.
You too, Ray.
I appreciate your help.
Anytime, sir.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. We'll step out for a quick break. Get back to more of your calls, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. We'll be right back. We are back. This is Computer Talk on a scary Halloween Saturday morning. And if you want to see what Bob and I dressed up as for Halloween, feel free to go to WTIC's Facebook page and you'll find out we dressed up as computer geeks. We're going to get right to your calls. I mean, when I was a kid, I dressed up as a bum. All my dad did was he would take a cork and burn it and rub it on my face and said, you're all set. Go out and go trick-or-treating. I'm like, oh, geez. I think nowadays we could even do that. It's probably not even politically correct these days. Let's go to Walt in Naugatuck. What's going on, Walt? Walt, you there? Hey, Walt, you there? Walt going once? Walt's probably listening on hold or something. You there, Walt? I think his name is Walt in Naugatuck. And we'll put Walt back on hold. Let's go to over to Don in West Springfield next. What's going on, Don? Where'd you guys go? Where is everybody? Walt, you there? Don, you there? Anybody there?
Don's here.
Hey, Don's there. What's going on, Don?
Don, yeah, I'm from West Springfield. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a problem with a File Explorer icon on my desktop. When I open it up, it opens up and shows me the list of folders and files and whatever. But for some of the files that I try to open, it just sits there and says it can't find it. But if I go to, let's say, my Excel icon,
mm-hmm.
I open that up and I open up a particular file, try to open it, it'll open. But I can't get to those files through the File Explorer icon. I don't know what the problem is.
Sounds like an association issue. What do you think, Bob?
Yeah, I think that your shortcut is probably bad. And I think what I would do is basically get rid of it and create a new one.
And how do I do that?
So... what you want to do is go to your Start button and navigate down to, I believe it's under System. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Let's see here. It's going to be under Windows System, I believe. Yeah. And then under Windows System, there's File Explorer. Basically, you right-click on that and click on where it says... well, you can pin it to Start. You'd have to go to, there you go. Pin it to your Start menu or pin it to your taskbar. And then once you do that, you can right-click on it, I think, and send it to...
your desktop.
Your desktop, yeah.
So what we're doing is just telling you to go through the same process of getting your File Explorer on your desktop, and that might work. It could also be that you've got an association issue within your File Explorer where it doesn't see or it doesn't want to open up Excel files. Are you sure, though, that the files you're opening up are the same files? Could you have a corrupt file that you're trying to click on?
No.
It's not corrupt. Okay, so I'm guessing that for some reason the file extension is not associated with Excel. when you double-click on it, it's not kicking off and opening up Excel for you like you're hoping, right? But when you go into Excel, of course Excel is going to open an Excel file. It has no problem with that.
Right.
So to associate files within File Explorer is just a matter of, that's a little more configuration as well to reconfigure that so that you associate certain applications with certain file extensions. That we can easily put instructions on for you as far as how to redo that. I suspect that's what happened. But does it happen all the time with every Excel file or only certain Excel files? Or is it certain flavors of Excel files? Or is it all the time?
It can happen with a Word file as well.
Randomly?
Couldn't tell you that.
Okay. So it sounds like you don't have a proper association for doc or XLS type files so that when you double click on them, the Explorer says, oh, I know what I'm going to use here. I'm going to use this program to open it up. Because you know when you open it up manually through the actual tool, it does work. So I think it's an association issue. The only way to prove if it's something else where it sort of works one time and doesn't work another time, and that would be back to corruption of the file or versioning of the file. A lot of folks have different flavors of Word, right? So if I send you my Word 2013 and you're running Word 2010 and I haven't sent it to you in a compatibility mode, your Word may not be able to open it up very well. It at least should try, though, and I suspect yours isn't even trying, right?
Right. You know, this problem happened after we had a power outage here.
Yeah. I mean, you could have had a black bear walk past your house, too. I don't think that's logically connected.
Okay.
But I hear you. As an IT guy, we hear that kind of stuff a lot. You know, the last thing I did was I had a peanut butter sandwich and I lost power. It shouldn't have anything to do with it. It shouldn't do that to you as far as logic goes. But we can show. We're going to put a link up here as to how you reassociate programs with files, and you can check the association to make sure that the proper application is used when you double click on that type of file. And I think that's your problem. You may have to reassociate or even associate the proper app. Maybe you've got a couple flavors of Word on your system or a couple flavors of Excel and it's gotten confused. Is that possible?
Well, you know, I haven't changed the files per se, and up until the power outage, I never had a problem. I could go right to File Explorer, open it up, look for the file, open it up, no problem.
Well, so here's the thing, right? So I could even give you a little bit of, okay, maybe it was the power outage because when your computer rebooted, because it hadn't been rebooted in, you know, 3 months, it updated on you. So, yes, the power outage was the thing that forced the machine to reboot finally and apply updates. So it could have been something like an update that broke this on you. What version of operating system are you running?
10. Windows 10.
Windows 10, yeah. I mean, if after a power outage you went from a cold start, your system could have said, oh, hey, I'm going to update this thing while Don's power cycled me here. And now a new version of Windows came on and it could have broken something. That is possible. But it was not the result of it wasn't a power outage that damaged or anything. It just was a cause and effect. So that could have occurred. But go check your file associations first to see if that is correct. So maybe that update, if the update occurred, damaged your association in some way.
Okay, I'll look for that link that you're going to post.
It's going to be there for you, sir.
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah,
so
bye-bye.
It is. Bye-bye. It is an issue with logic sometimes, you know, and you know, after the power outage. So, yeah, in this case, it could have been the case. But generally, the machine shouldn't change much. And what happens is you never really know when Microsoft forces an update, when your Word document program decides to update, when your antivirus decides to update. There's so many different things that can cause these problems. It's not really an if-then type of scenario. I wish it was. We're going to be here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. We have a couple lines open for you. 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Everything's posted over at computertalkwithtab.com. It's the name of the show.com, which also works. And if you follow us on Tab, follow us at Tab Computer Systems on Facebook, our links may get into your news feed if Zuckerberg deems them worthy. We'll be right back. Back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric And I'm Bob. And coming in at 11, Dr. Leslie will be in with Healthy Rounds. He'll give you a second opinion on your health advice. A couple things on the live stream there. Folks are wondering what they're going to do with YouTube TV dropping Nessun. So here's the beauty now as a consumer, right? In the old days, if YouTube, if your cable company dropped a channel, you could, they would actually have a commercial asking you to whine to the cable provider to come to a deal so that such and such channel would continue. In this case, you can actually take action as a consumer. And guess what you can do? Cancel YouTube TV. Like that. And you're going to say, Eric, wait a minute, where am I going to get my TV? Well, there's a bunch of other alternatives that let you just go ahead and try them. So it gives you a great reason to try Sling or try Hulu. You know, you just sign up, put your credit card in. It's going to be less or the same amount of money.
You mean there's competition?
It's the beautiful thing. So if you feel, you know, they might even ask you why you're canceling when you do go through the process. Hey, you guys can't figure out how to get Nessun. Gone. I'm telling you, you do have more power than you think you do as a consumer. And the more of us that do it, then, of course, Nessun and YouTube might come to an agreement. And then another person on the stream asked me to show you the Yubico key that I use for two-factor authentication. We put a link out there at computertalkwithtab.com, so you can go ahead and take a look at it right there. It's a great way to give yourself a whole lot more security that really it's unhackable. I know it sounds impossible, but it is unhackable. Without this key, you can have my password to the website that I'd be using, but you can't get into it unless you have the key plugged into your computer and you've touched it. Period. That's pretty darn secure. So I'll say nothing's unhackable, but I'll say it's pretty darn hard to hack. I couldn't think of a way.
Well, hackers generally go for the easy targets.
Yeah, the low-hanging fruit. All right, let's get back to your calls. You're nice enough to join us on this Saturday morning. We got a ton of calls here. We're going to go to Joe in Berlin first. What's going on, Joe?
Good morning. I have, past month or so, I've been getting all kinds of junk email.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you can change to stop some of that?
Depends on where your mail is coming from. So who's
Comcast?
It's Comcast. So
yeah.
You can go into. I'm not a Comcast subscriber, but you. Most of these folks that are off of the mailbox do give you a way to crank up the spam protections. So
okay.
You should log into your Comcast account, go into your email configurations. They should have a junk mail or spam settings area where you can kind of increase those settings to be a little more harsh, and that way you should get less. You can also go into your Outlook mail client and configure it to handle junk mail a little more harshly as well.
Okay. You had an earlier call about the printer being offline.
Yeah.
I'm having that same problem.
Sure.
And, I'm going through my own router and modem.
Yeah.
And the printer's wired to the router.
Yep. So, again, set that printer as a static IP address. Pick 192.168.1.38. All right? Whatever that is.
Okay.
Make a note of it on the printer if you have to remember. But so go into the printer and say, hey, printer, your IP address is static, and here's what it is. Then go into your router and say, hey, router, do not give out 192.168.1.38 to anything else. It's called a reservation. You're going to tell the DHCP server to not hand that IP address out because you've already designated a device on that IP address. Does that make sense?
Yep.
That's what you got to do. And then while you're in there, configure OpenDNS.
I already have that.
Nice, nice. All right, you're way ahead of people.
Okay, thank you very much.
You got it, Joe.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go on to Al and Avon next. What's going on, Al?
Hey, just a point while I was on hold, that Joe from Berlin with Comcast and excessive emails. I've been getting about a half a dozen a day all over the eastern bloc of Russia.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. The spam folder, I've actually called down to Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
spoke at length with their security department and all.
Yeah.
And
have they given you any suggestions besides what I gave, or were those
the
suggestions?
No, yours is better than theirs even. Their own, they all they basically said was, hey, we're overloaded, what can we do? I says, you know, they're coming from fake IP... I'm sorry, fake email addresses right out of Comcast.
Yeah.
And they're sequential, one right after the other.
Yeah.
Well, we just can't, they just couldn't delete them or this or that.
Yeah, they need a better job of setting up boxes. They need to make sure that these are correct users, but that's
right,
up to them.
Exactly.
It is their fault if they're, getting junk like
that. But they wouldn't.
Nope.
They wouldn't want to acknowledge that. Yeah.
Nope. So what's up with you?
I updated the Windows 10 with a new feature.
Uh huh.
And that was a real chore. I mean, I had to knock out the USB dongle I had on my laptop for the mouse.
Sure.
Had to shut off the McAfee antivirus. So
yeah.
After the third attempt was a charm.
Yeah.
And it did load. My question now is, there's 37 gigabytes worth of previous Windows installation and a bunch of other things.
Clean them up.
Clean that up. And then one last question is, it also listed about 8 driver updates.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay to do those en masse, check all the boxes, and click download and install?
Assuming
they know what they're doing, or do them one at a time? I kind of know the answer, but...
Well, see, 15 years ago, I would have been scared, right? Because it used to be plug and pray.
Yeah. Oh, all right. That's a good one. Yeah.
Nowadays, they're better, maybe. So I would be more apt to have you update them all and assume they know what they're doing. But Microsoft is notorious for saying your system is Windows 10 ready and then deciding it's not.
Can tell you that. Yeah, right. Right. But this is a different flavor. This is just individual drivers listed.
No, I know that. So that they're going to now make you more compliant with the Windows 10 update you just did. So, yes, you can go ahead and do that.
Yeah.
You sound like you're leery and would be able to go back and roll back drivers if you had an issue with your video or you had issues with something else. You should be able to roll
it
back. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, and we'll give it a whirl. It will be a lot easier, that's for sure.
To do it all at once, it would be, yeah. You can also do it on the hardware side of things and not through the Windows side of things.
Yeah. I go to Device Manager, you're thinking?
Well, I'm thinking if you, like, let's say you have an HP device. HP would have its own updating system where it will update drivers itself specifically for its hardware. So it'll actually do a scan and say, oh, okay, Al, we need to update these drivers. We need to update this firmware. And I would contend they would know better than Microsoft what drivers need to be updated.
So my HP Envy's got a routine where I can go to.
Yeah, what's it called, Bob?
Yeah, what's that called, yeah.
HP.
I got to make sure I wake Bob up every now and again.
HP is...
HP Support Assistant.
Support Assistant.
You should have a little support assistant. It's going to look like a big question mark.
Got that, yep. I didn't realize, I hardly read anything that comes in on that.
Well, it's a great resource because it's really going to try to update your hardware with specific HP drivers specifically for your hardware. So it can
right.
be good.
It's like the... electronic health records of 10 years ago, they were useless. There's nothing on them.
Yeah.
But you're saying the support assist is pretty good now, huh?
It does know. It knows about what you. It knows what you've got, and it knows what you need better than Microsoft does.
Oh, okay. I'll have to start utilizing it then. All right.
Sure.
Very good.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Good luck, Al.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right, bye-bye. So Jennifer didn't like my answer on getting rid of YouTube TV for Nessun because I guess Hulu doesn't have Nessun either. So again, maybe we'll find another streamer that has Nessun. Maybe we won't. Maybe Nessun will say, hey, go pound sand, YouTube TV. I'm going to go to Hulu and they get a better deal. Well, then if you really like Nessun, if you're a Sox fan and you want to watch the Sox, that's where you're going to have to go. And you can make that switch rather fast. And the faster you make it, the more impactful it is, I would contend, to the folks at YouTube TV. Oh, geez, we're losing all sorts of New England customers. Wonder why. Just one of those things. Let's go on to your calls. Actually, no, Matt's going to be screaming at me if I don't go to a quick break, right? So we're going to step out for a quick break. David, hang on. This is Computer Talk. A couple lines open for you. We'll be right back. We are back. We're going to be here till 11 o'clock. This is Computer Talk with Tab on WTIC. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And let's get right there. Bob is using his outside voice. We love it. we're going to get to your calls here. Let's go to David in Waterbury next. What's going on, David?
Good morning, gentlemen. Such a frosty morning.
Yeah.
I hope you can help take some frost off the relationship with my wife, because this is the thing. When she uses, we share one particular desktop computer, even though we have two other laptops. One desktop computer runs Vista, okay, which
Vista.
I know. Yeah, I know. Yeah, she refuses to give up Vista because it has grade quick. She's a teacher on it. But the problem becomes when she tries to use an embedded email response icon in a program
on Vista,
it puts my information in there, and she's furious, and I don't know why that is, because I use Hotmail, she uses Hotmail.
Yeah.
When I use Hotmail, when it says do you want to keep the Hotmail open, I always click no.
Right.
Okay. And yet when she goes into it happened the other day, she was trying to respond to a job application, and she
it pre-filled your information in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
all part of the browser. You have to clear all your cache. It's all stuff that's in your browser. It has nothing to do with anything else. The browser cookies are holding this information, and the website saying, oh, the last time somebody put something in a field, it was this, and I'm going to go ahead and pre-fill it for you, because it's so helpful. That's all it is. It's just a browser cache, and the site you're going to is looking at wherever that cache is stored and saying, oh, okay, I'm going to grab this information. David's got it here for me. It was nice enough to put it there for me. There's really not a whole lot you can do. The next time you go ahead and put this information in, the browser is going to try to help you. I can go and see if you can turn all that off somewhere. I'm sure there is a way to do it, so it never happens at all, ever. But it can be handy dandy. I mean, why is she so angry when she sees your name?
Because it's just an extra added step for her to have to delete that information and put mine in. And I went into the basic operating system, I think, and tried to change the administrator function.
No, that's not it. It's your browser. Yeah, so she's using what? Chrome, IE? What is she using?
Well, she uses Firefox, Mozilla.
So the autofill function of Firefox is filling in those because it's there. I want to say it's autofill. I think that's what it's called. Is filling in this information, and you can change that that setting in Firefox. I can find a link for you.
Oh, well, here's the follow-up question that.
Yeah.
That gets my goat. When I try to respond and, you know, to use an embedded email icon in a site, mm-hmm. okay, it tells me, it comes up with an error message, and it says that somehow there's no connection to the email program. There's no email program on file. When
again,
I use it, I don't understand that.
This is, again, on that same Vista computer?
Sorry,
on that same Vista computer?
Yes, yeah, and it's desktop Vista.
Vista. I've forgotten more about Vista. Vista was the worst operating system. When I always thought of Vista, I thought of just a cliff where you should chuck your computer over the Vista. If it had Vista, you'd chuck it over it, right? I think we have to find an autofill configuration here for you that'll help you with configuring forms or having that on there. I don't know why it would work for her and not you, other than she could be logged in and the browser is knowing her login on the browser versus your login on the browser.
Ah, okay.
There's a reason why Vista was the shortest lived operating system Microsoft ever made.
Really?
Yeah, it's really bad. One of the worst.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, tell her to stop using GradeQuick on that software. Isn't there a new version of GradeQuick that you can use on a different computer, or is it no longer made?
Well, the problem is that that employer, she retired from that employer, and that was a license to them, and she uses that.
Wait a minute. She's not doing that legally, you know.
Really?
She's not working there anymore, right?
Well, but it's just a mathematical function program, right?
All right? Well, somebody wrote it. Somebody should get paid. I'm just giving you a hard time. I'm not the software police. Yeah, again, anytime somebody bought software, I mean, it's licensed usually to the company, but if she paid for it, that's one thing. It's too bad you can't get it running for a current version of operating system, because that Vista machine is going to fail, and she's going to have to learn. And this is the funniest thing about teachers. She's going to have to learn a new system.
Yeah, right.
And it's always funny when we talk with teachers who are not interested in learning something new.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
But don't bring that up with her. It'll make it worse with your relationship.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the information.
My pleasure.
I'll look for a link on your website.
Yeah, it'll be here for how to control the autofill. That should help a little bit.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome, David.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Vista was released in November of 2006.
Wow. Long time ago.
It's been 14 years.
And she's still running Vista, so she can run great quick.
That PC doesn't owe you anything.
No, please retire.
Retire it gracefully.
I'm surprised who knows a version of Firefox she's even running on that?
Well, how about the hard drive?
Oh, my gosh. 14 years, 365. Well, I'm not sure how many days it's been running. All right, we'll try to squeeze in a quick call here in the top of the hour. We're running close to out of time here. Let's go to Joe in Watertown. We'll do our best for you, Joe, but we're coming up against the end of the show.
Hi. Okay, I'm pretty quick, I think. Right. I have a problem. I used to have my full screen, and when I watched the video, I'd be able to watch it on a full screen.
Yeah.
And then I bring my cursor down to the bottom, and my desk, my the taskbar would come up, and I'd be able to change the volume and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But now it stopped doing that, and the only way I could get the taskbar to come up is if I reduce the size of the picture, the video, and then I'd be able to get my taskbar up.
You got to re-anchor your taskbar. Your taskbar must be not anchored anymore to the bottom of the screen, right, Bob?
Well, yes. No, it is. I thought it was. It's always been there. And I went to taskbar settings.
Yeah?
And
is it anchored?
Is it locked?
Which one would it be?
Say lock the taskbar, right? The bottom thing is the check mark should be lock the taskbar. Do you have that checked?
Okay. Well, it was off, but now I just put it on.
Check it on. Now you should be good.
Okay. We'll give that a shot. I was just there a minute ago while I was waiting, and they were all checked over. You know, everything was on. It was supposed to be on.
All right. We'll leave it on. That should do it.
Okay. We'll try that again. Okay.
All right, Joe.
See, I thought that would be fast.
You bet. Very good, sir. Nice job.
You too. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. We want to thank all you guys for joining us on this scary Halloween morning here in Connecticut. Thank you very much for watching us over on the stream over at WTIC's Facebook page. Be sure to like and share it. Thank you, Mike, for posting everything live, and thank you, Matt, over in Farmington, for doing everything you did remotely, even though we had some sort of problem at the beginning of the show. I'm going to hold you to that. We're going to talk about it later. No, I'm just kidding. And as usual and customary, we'll see you when.
We'll see you next week.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
And I'm Adam Scott.
The Severance Podcast is back on Thursday, June 26th.
Each week, we talk about the movies and TV shows that influence Severance with the artists who make them.
Follow and listen everywhere you get your podcasts.